What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. This edition of 411 Teen opens the fourth segment of Common Sense, a five-part series composed of 16-year-old IB students from Rickards High School examining today's political climate and the 2016 presidential election. The Common Sense team consists of four teens with diverse political affiliations: progressive, libertarian, Democrat, Republican. The Common Sense panel seek to maintain a substantive political dialogue, analyzing and evaluating national, state, and local politics of today. I am Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and I'm always glad to talk with my Common Sense team. When I think about them, I get a big smile on my face. I enjoy them so much. Again, they're all students from the Rickards High School, and they are Hannah Karros. Hannah is 11th grade, and she is into sustainability and international relations.
Hi.
Quinn Huckabee. Quinn, also 11th grade, always love to hear his comments. He likes dance and science and government and foreign policy.
Thanks for having me.
I'm always glad to have you. Olivia Saunders, Rickards IB. She is into local politics and music.
Hi.
And Shonda Dina Day Allen, Rickards, 11th grade. She hasn't been with us the last time, but we're certainly glad to have you back. Look forward to talking with you. Her thing is science and math and Scottish history and reading.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, we have plenty of things that we can talk about today, but let's kind of briefly review the political happenings at the national level over the last couple of weeks, because it's been a couple of weeks since I saw you. Last time I talked with you, the big headline was the tapes with Billy Bush and what Trump described as locker room talk. Well, this week we have the FBI Director Comey identifying, I think it was 650,000 emails that need to be investigated. What is your reaction to this? Whoever.
I hate that. I think it's being blown out of proportion, and I don't like it. I think that even though there were connections to Clinton's aides, even the director of the FBI said that there was inconclusive evidence to, like, connect her directly to it in any way. And I dislike that it's coming back. There are absolutely valid charges with emails against her, but I don't think that this is one of them. And the fact that it's coming around so close to Election Day makes me really angry, because it will probably hurt her chances for election over something that she doesn't really deserve.
Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead. Yes, so I agree pretty much. One of the reasons that I'm not really a huge fan of Clinton is because I think that she has a lot of problems with hiding and falsifying information.
Mm-hmm.
And so for people who already kind of knew that about her, I don't think this is really a surprise. But it is weird that it's coming out right around election time and that the FBI has reopened the investigation based on things that aren't connected to her.
Right.
And I think that the reason it's being blown out of proportion is because Donald Trump needs something, and he found something,
mm-hmm.
and he grabbed hold of it.
Mm-hmm. And at a certain level, I mean, can you blame him?
No.
No, I mean, really, I don't support him, but I can't blame him.
Absolutely.
Hillary gave it to him. She laid it in his lap. Anyhow, you don't want to hear what I have to say.
Oh, it's interesting.
This is about what you have to say.
I don't think it's weird that it's coming out around election time, just mm-hmm. because, like, Comey is very blatantly playing politics by introducing these emails right now. Because even when NPR mm-hmm. is discussing it, they have to use such vague terms, because they say that new emails have come out that may or may not be linked to Hillary Clinton and the current email scandal, and may or may not reveal new information.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some much inconclusive information surrounding the scandal. And though Anthony Weiner's wife is a Clinton aide, it seems like it's not something that directly has to do with, like, any nefarious activity on Hillary Clinton's part, but it just reintroduces the email scandal back into the national discussion again. And I don't think it completely faded to begin with, but Comey sent his letter to Congress, they hadn't even received a search warrant in order to go through those emails.
Right.
So I feel like to bring it up now, when you know that you won't be able to do a conclusive, study before the election comes out, it makes Hillary Clinton look bad before we know all of the facts. And I think as FBI director, it's irresponsible of him to do that. Okay. And to be so, I think it's fairly partisan, and I think it's pretty poor behavior on his part.
Well, you all have raised some issues that we need to come back. And yes, ma'am,
yep.
Ms. Dina Dela Allen, okay?
Okay. I definitely think it's being blown out of proportion, mm-hmm. and we've already dealt with this. I thought we kind of crossed this, but it's coming back, and it's giving people an excuse to talk about it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's definitely going to affect people who are kind of on the border, because who do I pick, Obviously, people are not happy with both candidates, and now you have something that kind of gives you whatever you need to say, oh, you know what, I'm voting for Trump, or because of this. It gives you a really good excuse. And I just feel like they should have managed it a little better. I'm kind of disappointed, honestly, in her with her campaign, but yeah.
Okay, all right. Given that it has brought it, and I think you all have touched on this. Do you see any partisan relationship to this? Do you think that it had some nefarious, underhanded, covert type of meaning to it or significance? Go right ahead.
I think it would be really ironic if it does, because Trump was the one who said that the election was rigged against him.
Mm-hmm.
But I really hope not, because I want to believe that government bodies that aren't partisan
mm-hmm.
aren't partisan. But we have to be realistic in that he's a person, and maybe he likes Trump and he's in this position of power, and maybe he did reopen it in order to see Hillary lose the race that it looked like she had sealed up.
Okay. Any other comments?
I just think that it's particularly strange for James Comey to have actually sent a letter to Congress, considering that he's the FBI director. And if it's like sending a press release.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Quinn said, like, we like to think of the FBI and the CIA as being, like nonpartisan groups.
Exactly.
But by writing to Congress and by directly involving, like the political process within their functioning and their running of this investigation, he's already politicized this. So I think saying that it's nonpartisan at this point is kind of moot.
On the other hand, I don't think that we know all the, like you said before, the details of the mm-hmm. investigation are inconclusive. So we don't know when this investigation mm-hmm. began. It might have begun fairly recently, and in which case, it is really unfortunate that it came out right before the election and that they might not have results. But I do think that there's a possibility that he just felt like he had to be transparent. I don't really want to make assumptions because I don't know his partisan affiliation. I have to be honest, I'd never even heard of who this person was before the email scandal came out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I understand what you're saying, and I guess I am a little bit of an optimist, but I think that there is inconclusive evidence to us to really understand the motives behind publishing that information right now. And if he did really put it out there because he felt like it was important, then I can respect that.
You have a comment, Shonda?
It's kind of weird because before I know Hillary and the FBI, she was on good terms with them. She was talking about how they had a relationship that wasn't, she was kind of talking a lot of, they had a good relationship, okay? And now with all of this, and right before the election, I don't know what happened inside. I don't know what type of weird political
mm-hmm.
things are happening, but it's just really weird, and I think it's really suspicious, honestly.
Go right ahead.
Oh, I just know that I understand why James Comey and the FBI in general would, you know, want to be very careful and be very transparent in their handling of this investigation, considering the fact that, you know, Donald Trump has repeatedly alleged that the election is rigged, and the more transparent they can be, the more they can, you know, dispute these claims. So I would understand reopening the investigation, but still, to send a letter to Congress about it, that's an overtly political move. So I think opening it is, you know, reasonable, rational, makes sense. He's trying to, you know, cover himself. But, like, I think it's already political.
On the other...
Well, go right ahead. Go ahead.
But why now? Why right before the election?
Plus, I have to interject this because I want to make sure you all take this into consideration. He has defied a longstanding Justice Department policy, maybe not written policy, but this is something that I've always talked about, a Justice Department policy not to take action in advance of an election, okay? I mean, this has just kind of been like, you know, you have an unspoken kind of policy, and it's been identified a number of times in different conversations and in different newspapers that if you do this, it might in turn interfere with the outcome. Right? I mean, absolutely. If you release something like this, and the other question is, when is it going to be examined, completely examined? We're talking about 650,000 emails, okay? Now, will it be completed? Will the review be completed by Election Day? Will it be completed by the inauguration, that's what, the 21st? Okay. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, given all of that, and I know we're almost out of time, we're going to take a break, but given all that, how should Comey's behavior be handled? I mean, what does it say about the institutional integrity of the Justice Department? Was Comey really between the rock and the hard place? Some people say, hey, he had no choice, like you were saying. I mean, he needed to kind of say it because he found it. You didn't want to look like he was hiding anything. So was he between the rock and the hard place? I don't know. But you're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're having a great conversation about just the political happenings in the last couple of weeks. Going to take a brief break, but we will return shortly. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and I am talking with students from Rickard's IB program. It's our regular Common Sense Forum, and we're going to get started. I guess I will go back to some of the questions that I posed to you. First of all, what do you think about it being Director Comey defying the policy of just not interjecting anything before an election and not talking about it?
I think it's good that you publish stuff before an election because even though I am a Clinton supporter and this does maybe mean bad things for my candidate, I think it's important to be transparent before an election. I think it's important that the public knows exactly what's going on. And like Quinn said before, transparency is an issue that Clinton has had in the past. Mm-hmm. So if this kind of scandal came out after I hope she would have been elected, that would have been absolutely staggering to her presidency and, like, not a great way to, like, start off being elected. So I think that I actually, even if it was for partisan reasons, which I don't personally believe it was, I can understand and respect why that came out. It's just unfortunate for me.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I do know that the Department of Justice itself was pretty reluctant to let Comey do this, and he kind of did it kind of without getting the approval that you would normally get, mm-hmm. sending that letter to Congress like Hannah was saying. So I feel like I would want to know everything about a candidate before I vote for them. I would want to know everything that they could have possibly done that would be a federal crime even.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Or any crime. So.
Right.
like Ollie said, even if it's for partisan reasons, I'm glad it happened. And I understand why you wouldn't want to bring all the skeletons of the closet back up legally with the FBI right before an election. But okay. In the case of, you know, a possible federal crime, I think it's different.
Let me just throw this question in there, this comment in there. But for me, what does it say about the integrity of the Justice Department when he told the congressional panel back in September, yeah, it was September, that there was no substantial information remaining. They had covered everything. Do you remember that? Okay. They had covered everything. And they didn't have to worry because no new information would come to light. Now he comes back. And I'm not doubting that they are there. But now he comes back, and not only are there emails, but there's 650,000 emails that need to be addressed. So what does that say? Can we trust your word? Last month you told us there was nothing to worry about, okay? And now you're coming up with this. I know you didn't. I'm going to go right around the table. Did you have some comments, Sandra?
Yes. First of all, understand why you'd want to know everything about your candidate.
Mm-hmm.
But when your leak, all these emails are coming out and we don't have enough time to process them, honestly, I think, and what good is it going to do if you don't know what they are? You just like speculate. And I need enough time to go through them to understand. The public needs to know what exactly this entails. And this is not there's like less than a week. Wait, yeah. There's a week left till the election.
Right.
And I don't.
And they still don't know exactly what it entails. They don't know what's going on. Yes, ma'am. Go right in.
Oh, I just know that the emails. Anthony Weiner is so problematic, but the emails that they found, on his computer, they may or may not be new.
Mm-hmm.
They may or may not add anything new to the narrative. And I do like agree that, you know, if new information is found, they. Like I think the FBI has their hands tied, and they do have to release that information. I disagree with the style with which, you know, Comey decided to introduce it, but it leads to speculation, and it lends itself to just unfounded speculation, especially just because it's very inconclusive. So it's hard to discuss what's going on. I see a lot of different political channels because I know he's basically said there might be something else going on with Hillary Clinton's emails. We don't know what. We don't know
right.
if it's bad. We don't know if it's going to make her look bad.
And it may be nothing.
Yeah. And I understand that he has to release it, but I read the letter he sent to Congress, and just with the wording that he used, I feel like it's meant to a certain degree to be inflammatory. And
okay.
That might seem harsh. I may be the only one on this panel that believes that. But I feel like it's too early. No, it's the fashion that he introduced the emails, like the new email scandal, was fairly unprofessional through his letter. And I also feel that there's just so much that's unknown that until you find the results of the investigation, it's a little bit irresponsible to, you know, already paint Hillary Clinton as a nefarious character in a scandal that may or may not exist.
Okay.
I would just, whenever I'm thinking about things like this, I'd try to put myself in the other person's shoes. And so I'm thinking about, he finds that there's no substantial evidence for the emails that he knows about at this point. And then the FBI is on a completely unrelated case with Anthony Weiner sending those pictures to the 15-year-old girl. And all of a sudden, they open the computer and boom.
Right. Yes.
There's this whole new load of email. I mean, it was probably frantic in the FBI office realizing just they'd hit this huge, vast store of more information right before the election came. So he probably didn't really have time to think about what he had to do. There was probably a lot of pressure from different places. So I sympathize with him. I agree. It wasn't very professional the way he did it with notifying Congress. But I think we should also maybe cut him a little slack because.
So what I hear you saying then, Gwen, is that he really was, because I had posed this question earlier, he was sort of between the rock and the hard place. I mean, he was damned no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he didn't release them, he would have got a lot of flack. And if he did release them, he's getting flack. So what does he do? You look like you want to say something.
I just, I,
I think that he was kind of in a rock and a hard place, mm-hmm. but I agree with Hana that he could have handled it better. Like, there was definitely an air of unprofessionalism about the whole situation. And I also, I do want to reiterate that I do think it was blown out of proportion. There isn't any, to me, any connection to Hillary with this case, considering what I've read, just doesn't make sense to me. It just doesn't. But I think that I was right to bring it to the public attention, and it's possible that, you know, he felt that that was the only way that he could get it out. But even so, it's just not, I don't know, especially if the Justice Department says no, mm-hmm. that kind of airs of, like, not being legal to me.
And what about the role of Loretta Lynch? And, you know, she was in a rather precarious kind of situation. She had received criticism some months earlier because she met with President Clinton on the tarmac, okay? And so there was an issue. I mean, I guess they both were passing on the tarmac. They talked, and there was a great big, you know, issue, hullabaloo, about their interacting. And was her meeting with President Clinton and talking with President Clinton, was that a conflict of authority? I don't know if you all remember this. You remember this?
With the first email scandal, right?
Right. And so, right, exactly. So, and what happened is, from what I understand, and you may correct me, that Director Comey approached her about the second set of emails, and she kind of deferred to him, okay? And so that's when he made the decision to release them. Now, they weren't in it. She wasn't encouraging him to do it, but she didn't forbade him either, okay? And so that's the position he took. So another issue, and I know we're running out of time because we got a couple other things we got to talk about, but was he unfairly forced to make a kind of, what would you call it, a prosecutorial decision and comments about this? Because he made comments about it, you know. But did she push him into that when it really should be, you know, Attorney General Loretta Lynch? I mean, that's another little piece of the body. Yes, ma'am, go ahead. You don't have to raise your hand.
Oh, sorry. I just know that when, in finding that that Hillary Clinton had no intention to leak confidential information in the initial, FBI mm-hmm. investigation of her emails,
mm-hmm.
Director Comey used, bellicose, harsh language condemning Hillary Clinton's actions, but then choosing to not indict her made a lot of people question whether he was, you know, playing politics in that instance mm-hmm. and favoring Hillary Clinton in that instance. Mm-hmm. So I feel like to counter that, he may be trying to be a little bit more harsh with this one and just a little bit more critical of Hillary Clinton and, you know, what may or may not be happening with, you know, the current, like, Anthony Weiner email scandal, just because it maybe counterbalances what he previously did and maybe tips public opinion a little bit more in his favor for those that he maybe estranged last time.
But what does this say? To me, my question would be, what does this say about the credibility of the FBI? I mean, does it say anything to you all about the credibility of the FBI?
I think they're definitely still credible, but obviously they're not very accountable of their actions, and they need to be. And I think that definitely with the second time now, yeah, that's definitely a bigger...
It's an issue.
I think accountability is such a hard issue for the FBI, though, because if you run into something that actually is classified and you ask them to unclassify it, it's a national security risk. Mm-hmm. And then you could run into something that shouldn't necessarily be classified, and the FBI can say, oh, it's classified, and you kind of just let it go. Like, I understand what you're saying, and I do very firmly believe in the concept of accountability and transparency, but I also believe that there has to be some degree of secrecy with the FBI considering what they do. I mean, as far as what the scandal says about the FBI, I honestly don't know, but I guess I just don't think of the FBI as, to me, it is very political. I guess I first got into politics when all the political stuff with the CIA and different torture methods were happening. That has struck me as very political. And I guess I associate the FBI with that as well. Not to that extent, obviously, but that same sort of political nature. So to me, it's not very surprising. But I also think that, I don't know, the FBI does more important things, and it's important that we don't focus our opinion of the FBI on that.
Okay.
And I think that really the bureaucracy of the FBI is probably meant in a way to keep certain individuals from just being able to go out and publish something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, we have to remember that these people are individuals. They are partisan, even if the FBI is not necessarily supposed to be.
Yeah.
And so – and I also know that one of the main criticisms of the CIA back in the – second half of the 20th century was that there wasn't enough congressional oversight, that they were just the arm of the president and they weren't letting Congress know what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So we also have to remember that if the FBI doesn't let Congress know that they're going through certain investigations and things like that, that they could be targets later on if something goes wrong. But it was unprofessional, but still.
Yeah.
Oh, I just think that it's hard to find something nowadays that isn't politicized, and it's very hard to not play politics, and it's very hard to produce something that's objective. And that's true when teachers are grading papers, and it's also true when you're an FBI director.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard to take personal opinion out of anything, and I do think that we should be more critical of the one, like, you know, of those that are actually, you know, deciding what is legal, what we investigate, and how our country is run. But it's also, I agree with Ollie in that you have to understand that the FBI is dealing with confidential information, and it's very hard to keep something confidential while keeping the process transparent. So it's very hard to hold the FBI accountable because there's transparency is demanded to a certain degree when you hold something accountable. And if the FBI is transparent, then national security can be compromised.
Okay.
So it's hard to hold them to, like, you know, a linear standard.
Yes.
We also have to remember that Trump challenged the FBI on their transparency. And he challenged the FBI on their accountability, and he challenged the entire political system on its accountability when he said that the election was rigged. So the FBI might also be feeling like they need to prove something.
Mm-hmm.
With their, like, yes, we are doing the right things. We are being nonpartisan. We aren't keeping things away. You know, we aren't corrupt. So that might also be a reason why this investigation seems rushed and inflammatory. And yeah,
and I don't know how I feel about that because.
Uh-oh, she's kind of taking her time there. Go on, Olivia.
No, because on the one hand, I hate that the FBI, an organization that is supposed to promote justice, is so aggressive in promoting itself. And to me, that is something that is very political to me, like that very blatant self-promotion. I don't like that at all. But on the other hand, I think it's so important that the FBI is an organization that can be trusted, like, especially considering the dangers that we face in this country from terrorism and other threats. I think it's so important that we have trust in the organizations that are supposed to protect us, even if it's not necessarily due.
Well, now, what about the police? And what's
going
on? Right. Well, that they're supposed to protect us. And how much faith do we have in them? But I'm just throwing that in. You know how I am. Okay. There's so much that has happened, and we're running out of time, and we got at least two more major things we need to talk about. I know you attended the Trump rally here.
Yes.
In Tallahassee. And I want to get you to share, and the others of you to share, what you experienced, and talk about it. Share it with us, please.
I think I was just surprised because I've never seen Tallahassee so vulgar or topical, because I know we're a fairly, you know, like, liberal town, and I know especially a lot of the license plates that I saw were from Georgia, so I don't think the behavior at the Trump rally necessarily reflects the way that Talassians usually conduct themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But though I think I agree, you know, more with the protesters and the message that they were spouting, but on both sides.
Well, what was the message? And feel free, I want to hear from the, you know, the rest of you. Feel free to ask questions, comments. Go ahead.
Oh, just that, you know, Donald Trump is like the Antichrist. He cannot be let near our government. And to a certain extent, like, I agree that he's a dangerous man. But it...
How did you feel?
I...
Being a person of color.
Yeah, I know there were maybe... I saw one other black person in... I personally, like... I hate racialized things,
the one
things,
I knew.
I didn't even know that there were so many white people in Tallahassee. But just the only, like, I hate to racialize everything, but when walking through...
It's the reality.
Yeah.
Okay.
When the only, like, I saw maybe 10 black people on the way there who were, I mean, good for them. They were capitalizing on it. They were selling shirts and T-shirts, and they were selling, like, hats and adorable, deplorable shirts for little kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it just felt very... I don't want to be judgmental of Trump supporters because I know so many people, you know, throw words like hillbilly at them, but it felt very backwards to me, especially to see so many, like, young black men selling things on the way there, but not being able to, it's not as if they're unable to, but just not actively participating in that side of politics because there's an atmosphere within it that makes you feel like you're unwelcome. And I mean, I just know that people looked at me like, I was like, wow, yeah, I didn't expect to see one of those here, you know? I felt very out of place, and I don't know if that was me or just the atmosphere in general.
This is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Hollifield. I'm talking with students from Rickard's IB program. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. Before we went on break, I had to interrupt Hannah Kiros, who was talking about her experiences of attending the Trump rally that was held here in Tallahassee. Hannah, continue.
Oh, I was just talking about, you know, walking on the long trail on the way to, you know, the lot where the Trump rally was occurring. Seeing, like, so many young black men who weren't participating but were just selling things. And I think just, like, you know, minorities in general, they tend to be socially conservative. I know, like, on issues of maybe, like, gay marriage or on, like, you know, religious issues,
mm-hmm.
they would align okay. with Republicanism, but the Republican Party has ostracized them in some degree, and especially Donald Trump has ostracized, you know, minorities from participating within his campaign. And that's why you see so little within, little diversity within the constituents that are actually attending. And I know he was talking about... how we need Hillary Clinton has failed our African American communities, and I managed to make it very close, like, to the front, and it felt so surreal because I felt Donald Trump making eye contact with me.
Really?
And I kind of had to be like, no.
Huh?
But it felt so surreal, and
mm-hmm. Did you feel unsafe at any point?
I think I felt. I felt like an infidel a lot of the time. I felt like just like an infiltrator into a community that very clearly, like, you know, wasn't meant for me and wasn't composed of me. And I know when I was there, I found like a friend who I knew outside of mm-hmm. school who I knew was, you know, like an LGBT person. So I thought, like, you know, there's another outsider that I can, mm-hmm. you know, ally mm-hmm. myself with for protection.
Okay.
But no one was threatening me. But the atmosphere of the people that were there made me feel unwelcome.
Unwelcome. Any other comments you all may have? Sure, go ahead.
Well, as a moderate conservative, I think that this is actually a problem in the Republican Party, is cutting out people that you need to win elections and that you shouldn't be cutting out because, you know, it's America. We're a nation of immigrants. We're a nation of minorities. We're supposed to be. And mm-hmm. we are to a large extent. So I think that, honestly, even though I dislike Trump with a passion, I think that Trump coming into the Republican Party might actually be a good thing because some of the fence sitters.
Well, they created him anyway. Were, they created him.
Yeah, but some of the fence sitters that are in the Republican Party but aren't really sure about, you know, the radical Republicanism, they'll leave with Trump, hopefully. And hopefully this will be a way to gut out the Republican Party and replace it with new people and people that better represent the America.
Okay. That's a good point. Any other comments? What are your comments on? Yes, go right ahead.
Oh, honey.
I didn't see you. I didn't see you, Sandra.
Well, I wanted to go to the Trump rally, and the reason why, I never realized that, but because I wanted to feel like an oddity. I wanted to experience these group of people that I don't affiliate myself with. Mm-hmm. And I never realized that was such, I didn't think that was a problem until we started talking about it, like how they kind of alienate different groups of people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, that is a problem. So.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Oh, I know that following the 2012 election, the Republican Party released the Growth and Opportunity Report, in which they talked about opening themselves to minorities and becoming more inclusive because you have to, you know, the majority of Americans under the age of 5 years old are non-white, and that's the reality that you're going to be contending with when you're, you know, you're having presidential elections in the future. And Donald Trump's election, nomination is basically, you know, a step in the opposite direction for inclusiveness. Mm-hmm. And I think moderates in the Republican Party, like Paul Ryan, are actually, you know, they recognize those realities and are trying to change. Mm-hmm. But within the Trump rally, that definitely, and I have to admit, he's actually a charismatic speaker, and he talked a lot about the failures of the Affordable Care Act within that, and a lot of what he talked about, pulling out and the rate hikes that have been occurring, and some of the concerns that he brought up were legitimate, and that scared me.
Right.
For a couple of seconds, he had me with him, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, well, you know, and I think because we may politically oppose someone, our ideas may not be, you know, congruent with what they're saying, doesn't mean that everything about them is negative. And in Trump's own way, I mean, I think he's done some pretty remarkable things, okay? He, to me, and you can respond to this, but he's come out and said what a lot of people obviously are thinking and feeling. Okay, and even though he has alienated folks, he said, I don't like blacks, I don't like Hispanics, I don't like those who are disabled, I don't, you know, anybody that, a person of color that, you know, is brown of any color, I don't deal with them. You know, I mean, he has said all of this, yeah, and he has all of this support. That says something about the climate of the country. That he has this many people following him. We have to address that. He does offer an answer to those who are fed up. And I don't support him either, but you can't blame people for being fed up, you know, with the political climate as it is now. I mean, we can't. And even though we don't support Trump, you can't blame him. I can't go right ahead, Clint.
He has a great feel for the national temperature, basically. Mm-hmm. I think he's tapped into national anger, right, which is probably the most important instrument in politics for any nation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hate to make the comparison, but Adolf Hitler, national anger in Germany. I mean, Germany was really angry about the way they had been treated, and Hitler tapped into that.
Right.
I'm not saying necessarily Donald Trump is Hitler, but into the same thing. Mm-hmm. And it's really powerful. And even though a lot of people may not agree with what he's saying, they look at America and they don't like it.
Right.
And they're angry with it. And they see someone who's not like all the other politicians. They see someone who's an outlier.
Exactly.
And who doesn't associate himself
indeed
with the establishment. And he wins. Hopefully
and he's
not,
saying the things that they feel. Other people tiptoe around it. Okay. There is a large segment of the population that doesn't like X, Y, and Z. Now, we can say that's not right, it's racist, it's sexist, it's classist, but it's real. You know, no matter what label we put on it, it's a reality.
I mean, I don't know. I guess I come from an environment where both of my parents are liberals, but but my like politically dominant grandparents are both very conservative, and they're also both racist. And that's not, I mean, that's just the reality of this situation. I have grown up hearing them say the exact opposite of what my parents have been telling me on how we should value equality, having them make complaints about other races. My niece is mixed, and my grandmother threw a hissy fit. And I guess to me, because I have grown up in a liberal household, that is something that I associate with Republicanism. That is not valid. I know that there are many Republicans who do not feel that way, and I'm very happy about that. But in the reality is that that is the environment that I have kind of grown up in. So I think even before the primary, I mean, not to be like I told you so, but I nothing Trump said to me was surprising, and nothing in his success has been surprising to me, because I know that those sentiments exist in that party, even if they are not shared by all of its members. Something that I really don't like is when people say, I support Trump not because I agree with what he says, but because I support my party. It drives me crazy, because to me, what you are saying is you care more about supporting the Republican Party than protecting the most disadvantaged members of our society.
Well, that's also like the expectation that I've encountered, that certain candidates will expect you to support them just because they have the same skin color as you do. Now, we might have the same skin color, but if your, you know, policies and your ideologies are not where I'm coming from, and we don't jive, I'm not going to vote for you, because, you know, and that happens also a lot.
I think that was a lot of the appeal of Ben Carson to a lot of Republicans, even though, like, his policy, like, personally, I don't think would have been very advantageous to anyone who wasn't white.
Well, we got to stop. Oh, did you make your comment quick? Because there's something happening locally that we have to tap into. Okay.
Oh,
go right ahead.
I was just thinking that I know, I feel like a lot of Republicans, they took pride in, like, supporting Ben Carson, because I don't hate Obama because he's black. I hate him because he's a Democrat. Okay. So if I'm supporting a Republican that's black, that shows that, you know, I'm superior and morally righteous.
Right.
But, yeah.
That's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. While I was gone, and when I came back today, I have just been, like, livid behind this revelation that there is elevated lead levels in the water at the schools. From what I understand, now you all correct me if I'm wrong, I can be redirected, you know, but they tested 16 elementary schools and found lead levels, elevated lead levels, of 15? Yeah, I think it was 15 particles per million. Am I getting right? I mean, yeah.
At W.T. Moore, it was in the 20s.
Yes, but I'm saying that's what they're reporting. And you're right. I'm glad you brought that up. Because at some schools, it was even higher. Now, do you know what the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends?
Yes.
Because I told you. One. However, what does this say to you all? I mean, I'm just like, I'm floored. They knew about it, and the public was not notified till last week. Not even the school board was notified till last week. This happened. This testing was done in early August. We are, this is November 1 that we're taping this. It will air on Sunday. So we're talking about the end of October, that the general population was informed of this? What do you think? How are you responding to this? What is going on? Who is responsible? I'm shut up.
Well, I mean, the lead is it's not understandable, but people do make mistakes. I mean, communities make mistakes, but not to tell someone is the real issue here. Because I know that, you know, things go slower with bureaucracy and things like that, but that's not an excuse. I mean, if you have lead in your water, that's incredibly damaging, especially at schools with people that are developing.
Mm-hmm. Right. These were the elementary schools. Other comments? Come on. Yes, go right ahead.
It's been at least 2 months since they found these things, and it's it's like the way they told us, or I didn't even know until my teacher told me, and she said she read it in a report, and it's just they've been so slow and relaxed about it, and it's. And when I heard about it, and I was like, okay, obviously, I don't think it's that big of a deal because they didn't make it that big of a deal. But then when you realize that it's a huge deal and it can affect, it has so many horrible implications, yeah. But, I mean, it's just the way the atmosphere around it, they made it seem like it's not that big of a deal, you know? Mm-hmm. Just, oh, yeah, by the way, there's lead in a lot of your schools.
Oh, yeah, right. And the elementary schools.
Yeah, and it's just...
And we haven't tested the others, so we don't even know what's going on there.
And it's just, I've been making light of it. Like, yeah, it's not that big of a deal. And I feel like a lot of kids at school have also been, it's not that big of a deal, but it's the way that they've presented it, it reflects really badly on them and influences us.
Okay. Other comments?
I know... I'm fairly certain that the actual tests began, the analysis began in August, but I'm not sure that the results were actually found, you know, within that month, because it's, you know, analyzing the lead content of a lab, like, some turnover time, so I think I'll allow for that. But I also, for my extended essay for the IB diploma program, I was considering looking at the socioeconomic ties between high lead content and poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some labs that will turn over lead content testing within 48 hours.
Right.
So even if time, even if you have to conduct, you know, a conclusive study of many different area schools, I feel like even before the study is completed, if you find within, you know, let's say, WT Moore, their levels that are in the 20s, mm-hmm. which is just a level that high is completely horrifying. And I know the EPA's level of 15 parts per million.
It's 15, yeah.
I think that's, you know, higher than it probably should be. But to have a number in the 20s is just incredibly dangerous for the IQ of the mm-hmm. students that are developing, because lead has been linked to lower IQ scores. So there should be an obediency with...
I don't know. Okay, so this is very unsubstantiated, just to make a disclaimer. But... there seems to me a lot of political things going on within the lack of release of this information. I am very aware of the superintendent election that's coming up very soon and other elections that are going to affect who's on the school board, who is involved with Leon County Schools. And I'm also aware of other weaknesses that have been pointed out with the Leon County school system fairly recently that may have harmed the electoral chances of some of the candidates. And to me, this is kind of... well, for me, it's unfortunate because I support the incumbent. But it seems very like they didn't want anyone to find out this information because it is very harmful. It is a very serious issue.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And, I'm not sure that's necessarily surprising to me, but... it is something that is alarming for sure, and I don't know. I just really dislike that this seems so tied up in politics.
Yes, Sandra.
And what do we even know? Like, what they're doing about it? Is there? We know that now.
I think the last thing I read is that it was going to be discussed at the upcoming school board meeting.
Yeah,
I think now that it's hit the news, of course, mm-hmm. now they're going to discuss it. I mean, who do you think is... we only have a minute or so, 2 minutes. But who do you think is responsible? How should this be addressed? Because I think this is egregious. This is blatant. This is awful. Is it just me?
No.
I mean, I don't have any kids in the school, so I could go, I don't have anything to worry about. But I think it's awful.
I think it's very strange that this is the first time this is coming out, considering the Flint water crisis occurred over a year ago. And I also know that in 2014, we did, Talquin did a wide study of the water content in general within Tallahassee. Mm-hmm. But the school board never made it a priority to check student drinking water, which seems very strange to me considering the fact that we put a lot of emphasis on checking the tap water that we have. But the water that these tests were conducted on came from water fountains, which are directly meant for consumption. So I feel like there should have been more immediacy in making sure these tests were conducted and actually releasing their results.
All right. It's been real, as always. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollifield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.